From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Former Senators Olympia Snowe and Tom Daschle, Republican and Democrat, have joined forces to tackle gridlock in Washington. Together, they served more than 50 years on Capitol Hill. Now they're warning that the failure of the American political system to deal with this country's biggest challenges is putting the nation at risk, putting democracy at risk. They've got a plan to start to fix what's broken. This hour on Point, Senators Olympia Snowe and Tom Daschle on their prescription for a restart. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. How would you fix Washington? And what's the risk if we don't? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Later in this hour, we'll hear a call from a Duke Law professor, Jedediah Purdy, calling to embrace the conflict in Washington and fight it out. But for right now, we've got standoff. What's the sound of standoff? Something like this. Here's President Obama in Colorado yesterday talking about Republican opposition to his proposals.
So far this year, Republicans in Congress have blocked or voted down every serious idea to strengthen the middle class. They've said no to raising the minimum wage. They said no to fair pay legislation so that women are getting paid the same as men for doing the same work.
But fingers point in every direction. Standoff also sounds like this. Florida Republican Senator Marco Rubio talking with Fox News in June.
This president's not interested in working with others. His modus operandi is if you disagree with him, he accuses you of not caring. It's almost impossible to work with this administration because they're not looking to work with other people. They're looking to divide Americans in an us versus them mentality, and it's had a devastating impact on our ability to solve problems.
And standoff sounds like this. Maybe government shouldn't even be involved. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell blasting President Obama and Harry Reid at CPAC in March.
The greatest con game in modern American politics is the idea that more government is good for the little guy. Here's the truth. Under this president and Harry Reid, the rich have gotten richer, the poor have gotten poorer, and the middle class are being squeezed like never before.
And those just the tip of a very, very large iceberg of polarization and gridlock in Washington. Joining me now from Washington is Tom Daschle, Democratic senator from South Dakota from 1987 to 2005, majority leader from 01 to 03. He's co-founder of the Bipartisan Policy Center, a Washington think tank whose Commission on Political Reform has produced the big new report, Governing in a Polarized America, a bipartisan blueprint to strengthen our democracy. Tom Daschle, Senator Daschle, thank you very much for joining us.
Glad to be here, Tom.
And with Tom Daschle from Washington, his co-chair on the commission, Olympia Snowe, Republican senator from Maine from 1995 to 2013, representative from 1979 to 95. She's a senior fellow at the Bipartisan Policy Center. Senator Snowe, Olympia Snowe, thank you very much for being with us today.
Oh, thank you, Tom. Great to be on.
These are two of five co-chairs of the Bipartisan Policy Center Commission on Political Reform, released a big report last month. You got Trent Lott up here as well as a co-chair, former Majority Leader Republican Dirk Kempthorne here, former Idaho Senator Dan Glickman, former Secretary of Agriculture Democrat. We've got a prescription here. You say it's not a magic bullet. It won't necessarily solve everything, but let's begin to hear it. Olympia Snowe, let's start with the problem. What is it?
Well, that's what everybody's wondering, sadly and tragically, that, you know, Congress is now the least productive ever, as we well know, and that all-time lows in both the Congress as well as the presidency and even the Supreme Court based on the recent polling. So that's what's really, I think, infused our desire and our drive to develop this blueprint, to get things, to turn it around, to drive the reforms necessary to break the grip of the hyperpartisanship that's overtaken Washington and the ability to make decisions, rational, practical decisions that are affecting people in their everyday lives and affecting the good of this country in the future. You know, what's contributed to all of this polarization? You know, there are many factors. Nevertheless, we know it's broken, and the question is what we can do about it, and we can do something about it, and that's the essence of our report.
Tom Daschle, you and Olympia Snowe and the co-chairs say that our current circumstances raise the question, very clearly, the question, can our democracy function effectively in such a partisan era? You say that the shortcomings, the way things are rolling now, put the nation at risk of losing its standing in the world. What is at risk here, Tom Daschle?
Well, I think there's two major risks. The first is that because we're so dysfunctional today in decision-making, most of the issues that confront our country are going unaddressed. All I'd have to say is infrastructure to make my point. We have enormous infrastructure challenges, and they're not being addressed at all. And I could go through a list of 100 or more issues just like that. The second thing is the message we send to the rest of the world. We'd like to have everyone believe that a democratic republic is the best form of government. But as other governments and other people look at the way Washington is working today, they're all asking, why would we want that? What is it that would be to our advantage if we moved in the direction of the United States governmentally? So I think it sends exactly the wrong message to the rest of the world.
Olympia Snow, what happened here? You were on Capitol Hill from 1979 on, Tom Daschle from 85. When did this happen and how? How do we turn? I mean, we always had partisanship. You say right here in your big report, you know, it hasn't been a cakewalk in this country ever. But somehow we got into a new arena where things have just frozen up. When and why, Senator
Smith? Well, you know, Tom, it's interesting how it evolved. And obviously it gradually transitioned over time and grew exponentially worse in my final years, and obviously even worse beyond that. Since my departure, and that was the reason for my departure, not so much about the fight and fighting for the good ideas and being competitive on the issues that matter for the country. It's the fact we weren't addressing those issues. And as Tom just mentioned, I mean, there's been a legislative pileup on Capitol Hill. None of the issues are being addressed, large or small. It's now become all or nothing, my way or the highway. The scorched earth approach to governing and to legislating. So if they don't get 100% of their way, then they forsake it forsake the issue and move on to the next election. It becomes all about the next election, which was, I think, far different. And I think Tom would agree on this. At least you could expect in the first year after an election to work and concentrate on the issues that matter to the country, understanding that politics would interfere in the second year's year heading into an election. But now it's all about the politics and all about the elections and not about governing and legislating and what's, you know, for the common good of this country.
Tom Daschle, why do you think it's happened that we've come to this place where Republicans say Democrats are trying to jam too much government down our throats, you won't do anything? And Democrats are saying Republicans are so determined to do nothing with Barack Obama that we can't go anywhere. Why, Tom? Why have we come here?
Well, Tom, I think it's a series of things. I think the fault line is about the role of government in society today. That's the philosophical issue mm-hmm. that divides Republicans and Democrats generally on just about every issue, health care, tax policy, you name it. That's the first part. The second part, it seems to me, is the way Washington functions today. They're only in session 109 days this year. That means about 9 days a month. People leave on Thursday, they come back on Tuesday, and they try to govern on Wednesday. You can't do that. The money chase becomes even more of a problem. People have to raise, a typical senator has to raise $15,000 a day for every day he or she is in office. And they don't, so they have to raise the most in the last 2 years, and they spend two-thirds of their time doing that if it's a competitive race. Kentucky could be a $100 million race this year. And then finally, there's just not enough inclusion. There's not enough, you know, there ought to be a joint caucus between Republicans and Democrats frequently. There ought to be more meetings done at the White House frequently. There ought to be more opportunities for members to get to know one another and build a relationship. That doesn't happen today like it should, in part because they're no longer in town.
You've got three big parts to your prescription here: reforming the electoral system, reforming the way Congress is working, and then a call to service to the American people, kind of to get them more glued into the whole process. But it must have been, Tom Daschle, kind of overwhelming even to think about how to address this. I mean, you say you don't have a silver bullet here, but do you have a plan that could work to change this? It seems so intractable.
Well, I don't think anyone would say we have a plan that answers every challenge that we're facing as a country, because I think at its core, Tom, it takes real leadership on all sides, people willing to sit down, compromise, find common ground. So part of it is attitudinal. You can prescribe as much as you want, but it really takes somebody with the right attitude to say, look, this is becoming so serious that we've got to overcome our differences and find ways with which to reach some common ground. What this is designed to do is to start that dialogue. Can we reach common ground on system reform? Can we reach it on congressional reform? How about a call to service? You know, you either have to fight for this great country of ours, or you have to work at it. Those are the only two choices you have. Most of us are not going to be called upon to fight for it. So at the very least, if we care about this great country, we've got to work at it. And that's really what the BPC is attempting to say here.
Olympia Snow, we just got a minute before the break, but you start with redistricting reform. You say in many states, Texas, Florida, Wisconsin, plenty more, state legislatures draw the districts. It's become overtly political, your report says. You want independent commissions to do that instead. How on earth do you take that out of the hands of politicians who you well know do not want to give it up?
Well, that's where the public can play a significant role in driving that change, either initiating a petition drive or getting it on a ballot, or through the legislature and governor. But it's important to engage the public in this overall process and many of the reforms that we are recommending in this report that creates the Citizens for Political Reform, which is launching a national movement to engage the public so that they have a place to go on our website, look at the recommendations, and determine how they can initiate them in their own states and congressional districts to drive this change as well. Because when you have participation in congressional primaries, which, by the way, is now playing an outsized and disproportionate role in our political system today, we have to, improve and encourage a broader participation in those primaries. And that's where the public can come into play, by casting their ballots in these primaries and also creating these independent redistricting commissions.
Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this hour about Washington's gridlock, standoff, paralyzing polarization, and what to do about it. With former Senators, Republican Olympia Snow, and Democrat Tom Daschle, two of five co-chairs of the Bipartisan Policy Center's Commission on Political Reform. They're out with a big report on what they suggest we do to try and get off the dime here. They join us today from Washington. We've got them for about 18 minutes more here, and I want to make the most of it. Brian in Savannah, Georgia, you're on the air, Brian.
Hi, Tom.
What do you think, Brian? What's the problem?
I think the problem is it's beginning with gerrymandering. We have representatives and senators that seem to have jobs for life, no matter if they do their job or not. I would like to see term limits, or, on the other hand, I would like to see the voters in this country vote out all the incumbents until they get the idea that they're working for us.
Brian, let us pick it up right there. Tom Daschle, it's the first thing that you and Olympia Snow and the rest go to here. Electoral system reform. Our caller points to gerrymandering. Olympia Snow says we need public pressure to get politicians to give up the districting, give it to independent commissions that I guess would create more competitive, more open races. But let me put the same question to you. How do you get people to give up that power?
Well, I think Olympia's exactly right. You know, in the old days, the voters picked the candidates and in the primary. Today, the candidates are picking the voters. We're designing these districts so they're predictably Republican or Democratic, making the primary so much more a critical election. And because of low voter turnout, it's very easy to manipulate those primary elections.
But where do you put the crowbar in to change that, Senator? Because those state legislatures are not going to want to give up the influence they have.
You know, some states have done it, and they've done it only because the voters have demanded it, which is Olympia's point. Mm-hmm. California is the best example. They have really experienced major electoral reform just in the last 10 years, and it's working. Obviously, the jury's still out on whether it's applicable to all states, but we think that an independent commission that redraws the lines on a more fair and balanced way is something that overwhelmingly enjoys the support of the American people. And if they demand it, other critical state legislature opportunities will present themselves, and that's exactly what we've got to do.
You've got more in this segment. Create one single national congressional primary date in June. Make the primaries more open to get more people involved there, so it's not just a small number of true believers who are selecting. Congressional reform is the next big plank. Heaven knows we haven't seen much coming out of Congress, as you say, Senator Snow. What would you do to the way Congress runs to change that?
Well, and some that Tom already mentioned is that obviously inviting, meetings between the congressional leadership. The congressional leadership and the president coming to the Hill have for joint caucuses with both the House and the Senate. And also having the senators having meetings amongst themselves, you know, on a monthly basis. And the same is true in the House of Representatives and across the chambers as well. Because obviously there's very little communication underway in Congress and between the two branches of government. You can't have two branches of government operating as parallel universes, which is precisely what's happening today. And I know people, you know, sort of dismiss the whole notion of bipartisanship or compromise and consensus as if they're quaint notions. But in fact, to the contrary, there is no other way to reconciling the differences and to solving the problems of this country. Obviously, Congress and the president are not solving any problems. And that should disturb all of us as Americans. That's why they have to become involved. And establishing those redistricting commissions, they can do it. They can gather signatures on petitions, put it on their ballots in their respective states to get it done if the legislatures and the governors refuse to do it. But we've got to change it. And if we allow the small minority to participate in the primaries dictating who serves in the House and the Senate, then that's going to continue in perpetuity unless the broader public is willing to become engaged. We only have turnout of 18% on average in some of these midterm congressional primaries. That's been true over the last 20 years, even more. So even now, just in the 24 primaries that occurred this year, it's about average turnout 20%. In some cases, not even double digit. Again, that is deeply disturbing.
Senator Daschle, Senator Snow points first to the ballot box, and so does the whole report. But you take it on to the way Congress works. Senator Snow says they've got to sit down and meet and talk with each other, with the executive, the White House, the president. They could do that right now. There's nothing barring them from doing that. If they did sit down, why wouldn't we just have the same partisan conversation that's gone nowhere for years now?
Well, I think it takes a change in attitude. You know, what I find, and I'm encouraged by this, Tom, is that as I talk to newer members, and some who have not really all that new anymore, the level of frustration within the Senate on both sides is almost as high as it is outside. They want this to work better, and they're looking for ways with which to start the dialogue and to see whether this might actually change at some point. But as I said, you need leadership, you need a commitment to do it. I think fundamentally we've just got to stay here and work. You know, we're proposing that we do something that we've done historically, 5 weeks on at least, maybe 1 week off. It used to be 4 weeks on and a few breaks during the year, but at least 3 weeks of solid five-day legislative work is required to get that effort going, and I think that could make a big difference.
Otherwise, everybody's just out.
And more inclusion.
Yeah, everybody's just out posturing somewhere. Call here from New Orleans. McCaleb, thank you, McCaleb. You're on the air.
I just want to say I really admired both Senator Daschle and Senator Snow when they were serving in elected office, and I appreciate the goals that they're trying to achieve. But I just wonder why nobody seems to pursue this while they're actually in elected office. One could because now, honestly, they're out of power.
Yeah. Yeah, but Michaela, I appreciate your call. Senator Snow, I mean, we do recall your efforts while you were there, but they are few and far between. Why? Is it political suicide?
Yes, and I was certainly driving it every which way in my final years and throughout my tenure because I worked on a bipartisan basis, as Tom did. And unfortunately, the system shut down. The legislative process, as I knew it, in the United States Senate virtually shut down. There was no amendment process. You could give speeches. That was about it. But it was the road to nowhere. The committees had even shut down for all practical purposes. You had hearings But again, it was the road to nowhere.
So why? Why didn't you have more allies in fixing that, turning it around? Well, that's McCaleb's question, in a way.
It gets back to the primary system. And what's important here, we need to get people off the sidelines engaged.
Yep.
Engaged in voting, demanding accountability from their elected officials, from candidates who are running for office. This is their time. An election is upon us in America. And so we have the opportunity to demand from candidates who are running for re-election and running for election, you know, as to what they're going to do to make it work. And now, you know, so many members of the House and Senate are focused on primaries and taking, and so working across bipartisan lines runs the risk of inviting a strong primary challenge because of the small minorities that are captured the primary election.
So just
that's
get more people out
get
there.
Involved
yep.
in voting in the primaries, independent redistricting commissions,
yep.
open primaries. But people can do that if they get off the sidelines and engage. I encourage people to become active, just like the minorities are determining our future.
Yep.
We can get the majority to do that. If they're willing to get involved, they can have a greater impact. Then they can, I think, ultimately appreciate now.
Flood the primaries and change the flavor, maybe. Let's get a call from Georgetown, Texas. Einar's calling. Einar, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call, Tom.
Yes, sir.
This question is mostly directed to you, Senator Stone.
Snow.
To
yeah.
both of you. Thank you for the work you're trying to accomplish. I've reached the point of pretty much desperation. And my question to you, Senator Stone, goes back to the previous caller and what Tom mentioned about leadership. There's nothing keeping our elected officials from sitting down and working these things out. But, Senator Stone, don't you agree in all honesty that this began when Barack Obama, a centrist, there's hardly any left-leaning except on social issues, it was elected to office, and the Republican Party, led by Eric Cantor, made a very, very specific decision to go against everything, even infrastructure. Things like the Affordable Health Care Act is mostly a market-based program. The insurance mandate, the individual mandate, was a Republican idea.
I think we've got the gist of it. Forgive me, our time is short. Let me take it to Senator Olympia Snow. Senator Snow, you hear the complaint and the question. Is this rooted most deeply in, this caller asks, Republican stonewalling?
No, I mean, you know, obviously the Republicans bear responsibility, but as do the Democrats. And the fact is, neither side is working to make the process work. And the point is that it requires the leaders on both sides, in both chambers, and with the president to sit down and to have regular meetings and to open the lines of communications. And again, it's back to the public. And it's demanding that consensus and that compromise. And frankly, it's getting back to the point that Tom mentioned about the number of House members and senators who want the process to work. We as a public have to reinforce that. We have to give them support from the outside that, yes, this does make a difference. And I think that's the point here. We can have differences on the Affordable Care Act. I worked on that mightily.
Yep.
But unfortunately, I couldn't get the kind of changes that I thought were essential to that bill. And I took it to the end. I gave it my good faith effort. Sometimes you can have disagreements. That doesn't mean to say, you know, that we're stonewalling the process. There are others who did. But the fact is now we've reached a point where we're seeing it, you know, on both sides.
Tom Daschle,
that's the issue.
Yeah, Tom Daschle, talk turkey with us here. You hear our Texas caller who says it's Republican stonewalling during the Obama years. It's at the heart of this now. As a Democrat, how do you respond?
Well, I do think that the Republican Party has moved farther and farther to the right, which has exacerbated the issue. But I don't think there's any value in finger-pointing. I mean, that's all we see in Washington today is finger-pointing,
mm-hmm.
so that doesn't get us anywhere.
Yep.
What I think we've got to do is say, okay, let's forget who's mostly responsible. That's not the issue. It's how do we get out of this? And what framework do we have to get out of it? And what constructive steps, rather than finger-pointing, what are the things we can point to, using fingers or anything else, that will actually make this a better system once again? And that's what we're trying to do at the BPC.
Do you think there's a sense on Capitol Hill now that we've reached the point where that's necessary, or are people just still down in their trenches, Senator Daschle, and not going to get out?
No, I don't see any, unfortunately, I don't see any short-term relief. I think we're condemned to this for a short term, but that's really what we're trying to do, is we're trying to change that. You've got an election coming up. We'd like this to be an issue in the elections. Can we make Washington more functional? Can we come up with specific recommendations? Can we do what Olympia just said? Can we give support to those who are quietly saying, we've got to fix this. I'm inside, and I may not run again because I'm so frustrated that we're unable to do anything. And so I really think that what we've got to do is light a fire, and that's in part what we're trying to do here.
Aaron, in Nashville, Tennessee, you're on with Senators Daschle and Snow.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I don't think there's anything wrong with Congress. I think the nation itself is divided, and my half of Congress is doing exactly what I want them to do, and I'm quite happy with my representatives.
What's your half, and what are they doing that you like, Aaron? What do you mean?
Well, I would honestly be probably a libertarian, but I vote Republican.
Okay.
I think we need less government. I do not like Obamacare. I never have. I think if you don't like the benefits where you're working, your option is to go find another job where you do like the benefits you're working at.
But you like the gridlock. It's what you want. Olympia Snow, what about Aaron's perspective? Did you feel that? Do you on Capitol Hill, people who don't want government, they're fine with gridlock?
Yeah, you know, it's a fascinating point because, frankly, we had the Affordable Care Act. But unfortunately, you couldn't get the strong, bipartisan effort to even look at the issue of the uninsured health care. You know, I started that process back in 2003, to address this issue, allowing open competitive markets for health insurance. Unfortunately, that didn't work out. And then, to sit on the sidelines on these issues means you're going to get more of what you don't want rather than more of what you want if you have both sides working on the issue.
So beware of gridlock, you're saying.
Better legislation.
Yeah, yeah.
Who's to say on Social Security or Medicare or the Civil Rights Act, the Voting Rights Act? That all came about because people on both sides worked on the issue, and those bills enjoyed bipartisan majorities that became the fabric of our country. And the same could be true with so many initiatives. Yes, you're dealing with initiatives now that passed with, party line votes, unfortunately. And as a result, you're getting issues and initiatives like the Affordable Care Act that have serious legislative defects because you didn't have both sides working on the issue. And that same is true in so many of the other issues that are pending.
So get in and actually hash it out. Forgive me, Senator Snow, but our time grows short. The full report is up at our website, onpointradio.org. Tom Daschle, I've got here. Steve is calling in from Rhode Island saying it's all about money that's influencing things more than voters, and it's tying things up. I've got Donald calling in from Iowa saying young people, his peers, are kind of giving up just when they need to get involved. That sort of goes to the third plank of your recommendations, a call to service. You want Americans to get more involved. How, Senator Daschle, and why?
Well, why? Because we owe it to our country. That's so critical. As I said it earlier in the program, Tom, you either have to fight for it or work at it. But we can't afford just to be spectators in our own democracy.
You want a mandatory year of service between ages 18 and 28, doing what, military or anything?
It can be anything, but giving back to your community, giving back to your country, giving back in some way, expressing through your actions, not just through words and sort of nice-sounding platitudes.
Peace Corps, AmeriCorps, charity.
Exactly. We think that that's really one of the most effective ways to address the cynicism and the growing skepticism among the millennials and other generations.
I've got you for half a minute more. What's your message to the country listening right now? All the individual citizens out there about what you think they ought to be doing to move this kind of let's do something, let's get off the dime agenda forward.
We want all Americans to have 20/20 eyesight, interest and involvement. If they're interested and they're involved, things will change. That's the bottom line.
Olympia Snow, are you optimistic that in the lifetime of our young Donald in Iowa that will happen?
I'm a can-do person, and it's a can-do country, absolutely. And so I would encourage people to go to bipartisanpolicy.org, join the Citizens for Political Reform movement, and undertake these initiatives in their space to get it done. They can do it if they're willing to become engaged, stand up, and speak out.
Senators Olympia Snow and Senator Tom Daschle, thank you to you both. You can link to the report, Governing in a Polarized America, a Bipartisan Blueprint to Strengthen Our Democracy, at our website, onpointradio.org. You'll be into all of that. Senator Snow, Senator Daschle, thank you very much. In a moment, a call to fight it out. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We just heard from former Senators Olympia Snow, Republican, and Tom Daschle, Democrat, trying to end the gridlock in Washington with bipartisan solutions. My guest in this segment, Jedediah Purdy, says we have to fight it out. Professor at the Duke University School of Law, author of A Tolerable Anarchy, Rebels, Reactionaries, and the Making of American Freedom. His big article appeared in the July 3rd of Politico magazine's website. It was headlined, Time Bomb. Jedediah Purdy joins us from Duke University Law School. Jedediah, thanks very much for being here.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
So here we've just heard two senators earnestly calling for a bipartisan answer to this, and I'm reading your big piece here. It says, I am calling for conflict. We've been in denial about our problems, and the only way to work them out is through Donnybrook. You say, let the fireworks begin. What's your perspective?
Well, I should say, my perspective, first of all, is that I admire very much what the senators are doing, but I think in part because their project is a bipartisan one, and it starts from the partisan world that Washington is in now and then tries to overcome it. It puts all the emphasis on what we have in common and very little emphasis on what divides us. Senator Snow ended by saying that we need 2020 vision. I would say we need bifocal vision. That is, we need to be able to see two things at once. One is our democracy, which we have in common and which we have to fix and save if we're going to solve any pressing problem. There I 100% agree with them. The other thing we have to be able to see at the same time, which is complementary, not contradictory, is that there's a lot that divides us, a lot that divides us on the issue of equality, a lot that divides us on environmental questions. And in fact, when we've been able to come to grips with conflict over interests and principles in the past, it's actually strengthened our democracy. The bipartisan episodes like the civil rights movement that Senator Snow points to that have become the fabric of the country were bipartisan because there were liberal Republicans and conservative and racist Democrats then, because the parties weren't so homogeneous. But they were forged out of a country that was much more intensely divided and much more substantively divided than we are now. So we need to be able to keep our eyes on conflict and commonality at the same time, I think, to make this democracy work better.
I hear exactly the nuanced point you're making, but don't fudge it up too much on us now, Jedediah. You're very clear in this piece. You say, can't we all just get along? No, we can't. That we're in denial about our biggest problems, and that the only way to solve them is to fight them out. What problems and what fight?
Right. Well, I think we are, as you say, in denial about two problems that I'll say are important to me because I am a liberal Democrat, or maybe I'm a liberal Democrat because they're important to me.
Okay.
So I do want to keep an eye both on where I start and on what we have in common, right, at the same time, because people could disagree with me about making these issues priorities, but still agree that we need to be able to come to grips around them. So the first issue is inequality. And I say that there, of course, we're engaged in certain kinds of obvious denial. Thomas Piketty has issued these important findings on the shape of inequality over the last couple of centuries. People have objected to his facts. But the bottom line is that through a series of temporary fixes, expansions in private credit, the series of stock market booms, the housing market boom, and the long-run fiscal deficit, we've created a series of unsustainable debts that give the impression that we are richer than we are, but which have come due through a series of crashes and are ultimately going to come due at the national fiscal level. And that's enabled us to avoid confronting the fact that the rewards of economic growth have been going disproportionately to fairly small segments at the top. And we need to have a politics that can come to grips with that.
So others may have different priorities. That's one of yours. Your second big one is climate change. You say we're in denial. It's going to bite us hard. We've got to do something about it.
That's right. And again, the denial is not just that some of our politicians deny the science. The denial, again, is structural because we're running our system in a way that lets us pretend we're not running up the debts that we're running. And in this case, the debts we're talking about are ecological. It's a carbon deficit in the atmosphere's capacity to process our industrial emissions. And so we're pretending that the world can carry a great deal more fossil fuel activity than it does. And when we come to fight about that, it's going to involve a question about which generation carries the burdens, which countries carry the burdens, which industries and regions carry the burdens. And we're going to have a democracy that's strong enough that we can surface the disagreements and still have a kind of respect and sense of common fate that'll bind us to the answer that we end up on.
Jedediah Purdy writes, like a dysfunctional family writ across a continent, we Americans have learned to look away from some of our hardest problems. Part of the reason for the denial, he writes, is that doing something meaningful about these problems would deepen our conflict. It would reveal a country divided by material interests, not just partisan rhetoric and style. It would raise the stakes of politics. Such a division is not a bad thing. He says, bring it on. We've got to do it. Richard in Block Island, Rhode Island. Richard, thanks for calling. What do you think?
Thank you, Tom. Mm-hmm. The professor seems to think we should keep our eye not only on what we have in common, but also the conflicts surrounding us. I don't understand, because those conflicts are right in our face. They're right in our hearts. We can't help but to avoid them. I just think that the commission and your earlier program, which said we have to get the public to really react to what's going on with these conflicts and to do something about it by putting moderate people in office who are able to talk to each other. Once you can talk to each other civilly, you can manage to get something done. We don't have that anymore. The conflicts are certainly so conspicuous and overwhelm us today.
Yeah, Jedediah Purdy, Richard says conflict is all we do talk about. So what do you want?
Yes, so let's distinguish between two kinds of conflict. There's the partisan trench warfare that we have now, where much of the activity of politics in Washington is about getting an increment of power for your party, and where, as Richard says, a lot of what people feel out in the country, people who are participating in this partisan division in the culture, it's about style and identity. I say in the piece, it's about who you don't want your daughter to or your sibling to date. It's about how you say the president's name. But the substance of our division, it's real, of course. There is a division, as Senator Daschle said, over the role of government in society. But it's not nearly as deep as in the fight over civil rights or the fight over the New Deal. It's so toxic, partly because it's so futile, because it's happening in and it's reinforcing a politics where nothing is getting done. Conflict, you know, one reason I like the word is that it has another sense. One sense of it is just beating on each other. The other sense is striking something like a blacksmith strikes hot metal to forge something out of it that wasn't there before. Literally, it means strike together. And to do that, you have to raise the temperature.
What does that look like? Make this a little less abstract, though. Yeah. That's cool. But because right. Richard's right, we hear the rhetoric of conflict nonstop. It's what we hear.
Yeah, that's right.
So you want something more real, like what?
Well, so first of all, I would say, here are two suggestions. One is the senator's movement to save democracy, which I think is absolutely right. Notice that I assume, because it's a bipartisan project, they don't talk about limiting the role of money in politics. In the report, they talk about disclosure of donations, so you know where money is coming from. But that's very weak medicine. We know what the effect of money in politics is, and we know because we know people who've gone to Congress or gone to Washington to work on issues. Civil, well-intentioned, decent people who want to work with others go there, and they get caught up in a system in which they are whiplashed by moneyed interests that affect their electoral prospects in, you know, in the most basic ways. And we have 20 years of political science findings now that the perspectives and the interests of middle-income and lower-income people are basically invisible in policymaking. So I think we've got to take that issue on as part of a mission to save democracy.
And you're suggesting that politicians aren't really doing that? Now, there's some muting their honesty about how that's influencing their realm?
Yeah. I think so, because while they're in office, many of them, not all, but many of them, are reciting from the mandatory scripts of partisanship, of sort of superficial conflict and partisanship. So the other thing I would say about what it looks like concretely is, here in North Carolina, where I live, for better and worse, there is an intense revival in political awareness, political participation. I think you're going to see big increases in turnouts in our midterm election coming up this year. It's because some very committed conviction politicians from the Tea Party have been running the state legislature, and there is a strong multiracial, progressive, NAACP-led statewide coalition to try to answer them and roll back some of the changes they've made in voting rights, reproductive rights, et cetera, et cetera. I think it's going to be very good for democracy in the state in the sense that the senators are talking about. It's going to address gerrymandering and make people more aware of it. It's going to, as they say, increase turnout, increase awareness. But it's because we've got something to fight over, and those often go together. They just do.
Heighten the conflict to make it clear, maybe to get toward a decision. Marie in West Palm Beach, Florida. Marie, thank you very much for calling. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
Yes, my comment is that those in Congress, because of their ideology and because of the environment that they come into, should really start at the basics and have conflict resolution orientation. This is, let's identify the issues. Let's learn how to put our beliefs and ideologies and attitudes aside. And it needs to be brought to the forefront of their thinking again.
But Marie, what if Jedediah's perspective seems to be not so much conflict resolution, but conflict heightening, make it more acute so that we have to settle it and act on big issues rather than pretending to resolve or stay unresolved? What do you think about that posture, Marie?
I don't agree with that. I think it starts with the actual attitudes of and how the polarization of the senators and representatives, and they really need to rethink exactly how am I processing these issues and how do I relate about the problem, not the ideology, not the I hate Democrats,
yeah.
I hate Republicans. There he goes again.
Yeah,
you know,
Marie, we've got it. Our time is short. I appreciate your call, Jedediah Purdy. Maybe Marie doesn't want your tolerable anarchy. She wants conflict resolution.
Well, I should say, on the one hand, I hear and respect the decency of the impulse that she's coming from. And she's right. Politics is always psychological at the national level and at the individual level. But I think it's a mistake to see our partisan toxic trench warfare as simply a product of people carrying the wrong attitudes. I think it's also a product of the political system that the senators have diagnosed up to a point.
Mm-hmm.
Hyper-partisan primaries, the excess of checks in the legislative system that stop us from getting things done, and very much of money in politics. And sometimes people can fix problems just by being more reasonable, being better listeners, and overcoming their prejudices. But sometimes we actually need to change the tools we're using, and that means the political system. I think the senators are right in this case.
Trent in Smiths Grove, Kentucky. Trent, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
My question was, are either you're a Republican, so you're extreme on one side, or you're a liberal, extreme on this side, but most people aren't. We've only got two parties running.
Yeah.
And most countries don't. Most countries have four or five different. Look at the British Parliament. Why is it that we don't try to include more different, more moderate parties? So then it would be easier partisan instead of just being one extreme or the other.
And easier to mix it up and less easy to get slotted this, black or white. What about it, Jedediah?
Well, I think it's an interesting proposal. I think that it's true that there are problems with having two parties, which is what you tend to get with an electoral system set up the way ours is. I won't go into too much detail about it. One reform that's kind of interesting, which some of the states follow, is letting multiple parties be on the ballot if they get a fair share of votes, but they don't have to endorse different candidates. They can endorse the same candidate. So you could have voted for, let's say, Barack Obama or Mitt Romney in 2012, but on a line that would have indicated that you're really actually much more of a moderate, or you're really, on the other hand, way off to the right of Mitt Romney by checking a different party's line but the same candidate's name. So that's one way that you can make the system sort of more articulate about what people are thinking. I also think the senators are right that part of the reason that people have the sense that there's that the parties are not representative is that no matter who you elect, not much gets done recently, and a lot of invective comes out of Washington, and people get the sense, because we only know what we experience, people get the sense that, well, that's what politics is. And politics is just basically dysfunctional and hateful and ineffective. And I think the caller is right to say we should think about making it easier to get things done at the legislative level so that it would actually matter who you elected, so that you would actually see a different set of policies, and then you'd feel the connection between your involvement in the political system and the political world that you're living in.
You think we've got conflict now? Jedediah Purdy says, I'm calling for a conflict, real conflict. He says, let the fireworks begin, harden the lines, make them clear, act on them. It's the only way out of our gridlock. Maybe it would be a sign of an end to American denial or something in that direction. Jedediah Purdy is a professor at Duke University School of Law, joining us today from Durham, North Carolina. Professor Purdy, thank you very much for your insights and your time.
Tom, thank you so much. It's great to talk to you.
Great to have you here. In this hour tomorrow, we'll look at all the news of the week on the border, in Gaza, Israel, smallpox in a storage box. Join us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.